Hey, everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Jon Snow, and I just crap my pants.
And welcome to the show. How are you doing, guys?
Great.
I'm doing better than the Jon Snow gang.
Wow.
Winter is here.
What an episode. Holy moly. Wow, I just, it was the first season we were first introduced to the undead army, right? Was that the end of the first season?
I think it was the end.
That's the end of the second season.
Second season?
And Sam sees him walking away and he freaks out.
So, it's been a while. It's been a long time coming. And we finally see the White Walkers and the Whites in action.
Man, there are some angry people.
They need love.
Well, I don't think you could try to give them a hug.
These aren't your Walking Dead kind of zombies. These are some fast, intense zombies.
Yeah, War Z zombies. Yeah.
Well, it must be Americans because it just seems like on the Walking Dead they can't outrun them. The walkers on the Walking Dead, but these guys they would tear these guys the Americans up. I think we're just soft. But you know, I just saw something on Huffington Post where the actor who plays Jon Snow. He said that scene. The 20-minute scene took a month to film.
I believe it. It was – well, the whole time, because I wasn't paying attention at the time, I was going, oh, this is where they're going to leave it, right? Right when the snow fog was coming, I was like, oh, man, they're going to end it here, and then they're going to wait for that next episode. And just more and more kept happening. I was like, oh, my God, this is insane. I mean, I might be high off of just watching it, but this is my favorite episode, I think. It was so good.
Yeah, it was excellent.
Yeah, these last two more should be excellent as well. And I think for sure you're going to have that feeling of, no, you can't end it like that at this next episode. So,
but
I just kept thinking everybody was going to die.
Yeah.
But just, and from what I understand, this is not in the book. I think it was talked about, and we'll talk about it in the what happens in the book stays in the book section of our show, but really an epic close to an episode. I would say it's probably even better than the Blackwater close.
Yeah, I mean you can definitely see that they've got more budget now for CGI and bigger sets, because I know a lot of people complained that you didn't see the battle at the Fist of the First Men. So the end of season two, we see the dead army walking towards it, and then it just skips over it. For the beginning of season three, a lot of people were really disappointed. So I think they're trying to make up for that because they didn't have the budget then to make that battle. So
what battle was that?
The battle of the Fist of the First Men, which is where they're in that top thing where, you know, at the end of season two, where Sam sees them walking towards it and the White Walker points with his spear towards the edge. Yeah. And that's where they're going. And the season, beginning of season three, it's already past that. They've already wiped out the Night's Watch people that were there. And now they're running towards Craster's keep, you know.
Gotcha.
To.
Okay. Gotcha.
It was pretty incredible. Like I said, I was just with, like most people, just going, oh my God.
That is our initial gut reaction. Why don't we get into the recap? We got a lot of phone calls today as well. We could tell it was an exciting episode. Our phone lines were going crazy this past episode.
Going crazy.
And
it was like old-time Lost, wasn't it?
And we'll check out what happens in the book stays in the book with Nick at the end of the show. Maybe get maybe a little more of the history of the White Walkers, and it's spelled WIGHTS, but that's called, are they called the Whites, the actual, just the undead army people?
In the books, they're just called the Others.
Okay.
And really? White Walk, yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah, in the show, they just called them White Walkers, and it's kind of stuck, and then I actually like to say White Walker more than the Others, so.
Gotcha. All right, well, let's get into the recap. Here we go. So we kind of take off one of the storylines that was finished in the last episode with Jorah, Tyrion, and Daenerys in their throne room.
Yeah, they're in Meereen. It's an all dialogue scene. It is just she's up on her throne, and Jorah and Tyrion are down below, and
she's still mad.
She's still mad, yeah. She forbids Jorah right out. Like, I don't want to hear you speak So you're like, oh, poor Jorah.
Come on, give me a break.
I love you. And
my heart is bleeding. That's my best I can do.
And then she questions Tyrion on his actual identity. Like, how can she believe that he really is who he is? To which he, you know, to summarize, he claims that he's the greatest killer of Lannisters of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, though. Killed his mom, killed his dad.
Yeah, killed his dad, and yeah. So she questions, like, why should Tyrion... It's actually a really witty back and forth in this scene and the next scene they have together. And you see, like, Tyrion, she's like, why should I let you into my service and allow you to advise me after you killed your own family? And he's like, oh, we've only just met.
You know, like, some great lines by him.
Yes, yeah, like he did. They were, even though both of their scenes are literally just sitting, and it's just great dialogue back and forth, and you almost have to write it all out just to explain this to these listeners here. But he's like, you know, we've just met. How do I know that you're worthy of my service? You know, so it's, he's kind of just saying, like, I'm better than you in a way. But he does impress her. He explains her life to her from a Westeros point of view. Like, I heard these stories of you, you know, almost killed as a child, being smuggled away, and then married off to, he didn't say his name, but, you know, to the, to Drogo. And he thought that would be the end of it. But instead, now she has an army, wealth, and dragons. Like, he said, if anything, you were worth meeting.
Yeah, right. For sure. Faux show. We then go to Jorah getting kicked out of the city, basically.
Yeah, she says, okay, well, why should I listen to you? Basically, she gives him a test, kind of. If you're going to advise me, what should I do with Jorah? And he actually, in the beginning, he makes a good case for Jorah, saying, like, you know, he's not the same man that you knew him when he started spying on you. You know, he's extremely devoted. I've never seen anyone be devoted to a task at hand, but he still betrayed you. He probably worships you and may even love you. So you kind of think, oh, good, he's going to say, like, let Jorah back in. But then he goes, but he didn't trust you. And even though you may forgive him for this, you cannot, if once you conquer Westeros, he should not be by your side. And so she doesn't kill Jorah, but she just decides to banish him from the city.
I thought he made a good point, though, when he said, you know, because I was like you, I thought, okay, he's making a case for him to stay. But then he said he didn't trust you enough to tell you the truth.
Right.
To tell you what was going on. He didn't trust you, so you can never trust him. And I go, yeah, once you said that, you can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that he loves it. Doesn't matter. He broke the big, you know, trust is the biggest thing in, you know, probably life. And he broke it. So you're out.
Yeah. Poor Jorah.
Yeah.
But he also, like, a little early, he also makes a pretty good case of why he should be her advisor, just the fact that he knows the houses, he knows the strengths of Westeros that no one else there knows.
He's a politician.
So, yeah. So, and, you know, he was handed the king, too, so he actually does know what it's like to rule.
The line he used was funny, but I had to deal with the one that killed puppies or something. I don't know. Whatever he said was, it was funny how he said it.
Yep.
Yeah.
From there, we go to Cersei looking great, and brings her food and water.
All right, Jay, I got to ask you. You're a Cersei hater.
I am.
Any sympathy for it all during this scene?
No.
Did you one time go, all right, it's gone too far.
Close. Come on, really?
At one point, I felt sorry for her. I wish she would have got up and smacked that woman. I was like, come on. This is a Survivor episode, but it was like, you know,
she's had this coming for years.
Oh, I get it, but I kind of felt bad for her.
She's murdered people, and you're saying that's her being for a little while.
Haven't we all murdered people? No. I mean, no one's listening, right? We can be honest.
Only emotionally.
Okay. We've all thought about it, right? you know, so no sympathy whatsoever. Not at all.
Well, there is a friend that we have that I almost push off a cliff every time I'm around her. So
we all feel that way.
Yeah.
Wait,
about that person?
Him?
No, her.
Her.
You know who she is.
Oh, you know. Yes.
See, there you go.
Yep.
But no, I actually like these scenes between Cersei and the Septon because they're the closest to the book this season, I think, almost verbatim, that, mm-hmm. what happened. I mean, they're very short scenes, but yeah, like I she's almost, to me, she's Nurse Ratched. You know, that's why.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I think of the Septon. It's just like, you're not getting any sympathy from me. Confess. Here's the spoon of water. If you confess, you can have the water. Confess. And she's like, oh, you just want to kill her. So.
Yeah, that's where I don't know. I had a little sympathy for her.
Yeah. No. But she doubles down, though, on the threat, which is a bit shocking. You know, like, I promise you the last thing that you see will be my face, you know, and then just smacks her against the spoon, almost like the way Jaqen H'ghar smacks Arya with the wand. It's like, mm-hmm. lie. So.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So it's a little good too good for her. And then we go to Arya, who's preparing a new identity with our good friend Jaqen.
Yes. I actually was impressed with the scene, the way it was shot and things. But Arya is creating a new character named Lana. And she's telling Jaqen H'ghar about her daily routine as she's creating this character, what she's going to do, how she's already gotten the habits, creating her story for if anyone questions her, she goes, this is what I do every day. This is how I made my money. This is how I got my cart. And she's selling oysters, clams, and cockles.
Cuckoos.
Delicious, by the way.
Which what?
They look delicious, by the way.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I'm not an oyster guy, but they did look kind of tasty. I'm not going to lie.
I'm going to lie. I was lying. They didn't look at all.
Every time I see an oyster, I always think about, even though I enjoy them, I always think about the first man who had to eat one. Because it's like, nothing about an oyster looks appetizing at all. You know, you had to be starving.
We went to Hooters one time and Warm Taffy had them. Mm. You remember that time, Jay?
Oh, yeah. I remember.
And I just kept telling him, I just started pointing out, I said, well, where does the oyster go to the bathroom? And he goes, what do you mean? I go, well, where does it go to the bathroom? You know, that's sealed. And he goes, I think he got sick to his stomach afterwards because he didn't go to the movie with us. It was, we saw Planet of the Apes, the remake.
That's right. He bailed out of going to see the movie.
He bailed out. Right. That's where we're walking out. And the guy said, I didn't like it. It just wasn't believable.
Yeah. Is this the 2000 version or
the crappy Tim Burton version?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
but there's actually one thing that's also neat about this episode is that there actually is a few Easter eggs, which I think are pretty neat. And this one in particular, the character's name is not actually Lyanna in the book. It's Kat. But I think the writers probably changed it to Lyanna because they would think people would get confused with her mom, Caitlin.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But makes sense. When she in the book title, because it's she's no longer Arya, she's these characters in the book, so it's the point of view, so it'll be Kat in that one. But it's called Kat of the Canals in the book, and if you watch that scene where she's just first pushing the cart, as soon as she says, I'm this person of the canals, a cat runs right in front of her. So it's like
okay, cool.
It's a little throw out, which I thought was just pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, she's telling Jaqen all these things, and he actually is quite impressed of how well she's coming along and lying and giving him this information. So he's so impressed that he continues. He says, "I'm going to give you a mission now, but instead of going into the canals, you're going to go to the harbor." And she's wondering what for. He's like, "Well, you'll find out. You'll see." So she's basically just there on an observation mission, and she comes across a gambler, as they call it, or what we would call an insurance salesman today. Because we all love insurance salesmen, who is refusing to take a sailor's bet, which, to give us a little more understanding, in case some people didn't get it, is that basically the captain of a ship, it's basically insurance, he's making a bet to, I'm going here, and if I don't return, give this money plus the wager to my family. But that's what the gambler's prerogative is. He looks at the course, the route of the ship, and he'll say yes or no depending on the risk if he wants to take it or not. Mm-hmm. And that's what this guy did. Like, it was too risky of a journey, so he said no to him outright. And the guy was like, no, I need it because if I die, then my family will be homeless. So that's where that was coming from. Mm-hmm. I'm sure some people understood it, but she went back to Jaqen and then told him this, though. And so his next mission is now, I want you to fully integrate into this guy's system, know him as well as you know yourself. And if he's cheating these people, if the captain actually dies, if he cheats the family, then give him the gift of death. So,
And she had a little smirk on her face as she walked away too.
She did, oh, yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
You didn't see the smirk?
I didn't see the smirk.
No. Yeah, she was walking away. Yeah, had a little bottle of death. This was what we assume. She had a little smirk on her face.
I can do this. Yeah.
well, we then return to Jack's favorite character, Cersei, and Qyburn. Qyburn makes a visit and gives
really
her
my
details.
Favorite character. My favorite
hey, listen,
character.
Listen, you're the one. You know,
I have a heart. I'm sorry, I have a heart.
Hey, listen. I feel whatever, bad for people. Hey.
She made some wrong decisions in life.
You can be a Cersei fan if you want to be a Cersei fan.
Everyone deserves a 10th chance.
Yeah, I was reading some post on Facebook about that, how the few conventions that she showed up at, that when they do like the whole line of autographs, that most people either say, I don't like you, I don't want an autograph, and bypass her.
Oh, God.
And she says, like, I consider that to be a compliment. That means that my character is who it's supposed to be. So...
Wow, that is brutal.
Well, Jack will get an autograph.
Yeah, I'll get an autograph. I won't be Django by and spit on her.
That's a real person. I'm saying this character. I'm
yeah, gonna... sure, Jay. You'd go up there and you take your water bottle in Hawaii with it. It's all human and just pour it on the ground.
Well,
take that.
Everybody's favorite alchemist, Qyburn, gives updates to Cersei on what's going on with her trial.
Way to bring it back.
Thank you.
He informs her of she gives her an update on the news, and he, you know, that you will be put on trial in front of the High Sparrow for fornication, treason, incest, and the murder of Robert Baratheon. So she's kind of screwed. but of course, she's still like, oh, they're all lies. And he's like, oh, of course. Yeah. But then she asks for news about Jaime, but there's no word for Jaime. But then, he does tell her that Maester Pycelle has sent for her uncle Kevin to be now the new Hand of the King, to which she, of course, wants him to visit her, but he said no, Kevin Lannister doesn't want to see her. So even her own family is kind of like, you know, you dug yourself a hole, you can live in it for a while. And then she asks, of course, about Tommen, because she wants to know about her son, but he gives her some pretty grim news about her son, that he's just been devastated, that he hasn't left his bedchamber or even eaten any food since her arrest. So she's then she kind of comes to her senses, like, yes, I need to see him, I need to get back to him. And then, of course, Qyburn, in a kind of a shocking way, kind of is like, well, then there's only one way for that to happen, which is confession. And of course, Cersei is not going to confess to these things, because it's a lot of crimes. So she's like, no, I elevated this man. I brought him up from a commoner. I'm not going to bend the knee to a peasant, pretty much.
Just ask Mance how that one went.
Yeah, exactly. But he does give a little bit of hope as he's leaving the room, which basically he just says the work continues.
Yep. So, which is his Frankenstein mountain monster, I would assume.
Yeah, you're correct. Yes, it's the Frankenstein.
Yes, we then go to Sansa, who gets some food from our good friend Reek. Reek spills the beans, as they say.
Yeah, it's a short but kind of good scene. He comes in to give her dinner or lunch, whatever. And she's questioning, like, why did you betray me? I don't understand it. And he's just so psychologically broke that, you know, he tells her, he's like, there is no escape. You know, the master knows everything. And then he actually refers to himself as Theon. He's like, Theon tried to escape, but I was caught, tortured, and pieces of me were cut away till there's nothing left of Theon. And Sansa, kind of in a sadistic way, she's like, well, good. You know, I would have done the same thing to you if I could have been Ramsay. But Reek humbly is like, yes, I deserve my punishment. I deserve to be Reek for what I did to Rob, for capturing Winterfell and murdering those boys, to which Sansa takes it as an insult. You know, she's like, you say their names, kind of like, you know, it's Bran and Rickon, your family. And then he stutterily kind of says, it wasn't Bran and Rickon, they're still alive. And then Sansa, of course, wants to know where they are, but Rick doesn't know, and then flees the room.
Now, does this scene confirm, because remember, I think we had a call last week where we talked about, where did he actually go up into the tower where we were supposed to put the candle?
it confirmed that he didn't go to that.
He didn't go. So he didn't go up there. Ramsay just didn't have to be up in the torn up tower. He just
went to wherever Ramsay was.
All right, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, but at least in this sense, it does give hope to Sansa, whose character, controversially has been just bruised and beaten this season. And really, as a whole, for an entire storyline, it's kind of giving her hope that she thought she was the last, Stark period, but that's not true now. Some of her family is still out there.
And she still has some fight in her with the way she was talking to Theon, too.
Well,
I mean, a little bit of fight in her. I mean, at least she's not giving up. I mean, she's the anger she showed towards Theon, at least there's hope. I mean, there's hope that she can, I don't know.
Well, I don't think anyone's scared of Reek at this point. You could just hit him with your finger, he'd fall over.
So. Poor Reek. Do you feel sorry for Reek, Jay? Do you feel sorry for Reek?
No, I mean, it's what happens when...
No sympathy for Reek at all.
No, it's...
Everything the poor guy's been through, you have just no sympathy for.
Well, listen, I never wish a dude getting his, member chopped off. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, but... He turned on the people that took care of him, and he has gotten what's coming to him.
That's okay. Karma.
Karma. Karma. There you go. All right.
Karma is a B word, as they say in the world.
Yeah. But yeah, then we go to Roose and Ramsay for a very short scene, and Roose Bolton is discussing with his counselors, a strategy of how to deal with Stannis' invading army. To which he just suggests very wisely, let's just border up Winterfell and sit through it. They have to come to us and fight us when we're defended, and they'll be exposed to the elements. And then once they start freezing, starving, they'll mutiny, and then the victory will be theirs.
Which is actually a pretty good strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's the best strategy to take.
There's no reason to attack.
Right. But Ramsay, though, disagrees with this, though, and he thinks that they need to show the North that they're strong, and how they would deal with anyone who tries to attack their family. And here's the second little Easter egg, which, he just says, this hit first and hard and leave a feast for the crows, which Feast for Crows is the name of the fourth book. So,
okay. So wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wink. Yeah. Just little subtle things that are just like, hey,
in Game of Thrones, you either win or you die.
Exactly. Yeah. But, Roose says the snow is too thick to get an army through, so which Ramsay says, I don't need an army. I just need 20 good men. So let's see what Ramsay's up to.
Yeah. Hopefully it leads to Ramsay's demise. That would just be my own personal hope.
I see Ramsay surviving.
Then we go to Tyrion and Daenerys having a private conversation. Really, really great scene.
Yeah, it's another, like I said earlier, it's a straight dialogue scene. They're literally just sitting in two chairs looking at each other the entire scene. But it's great. It's really well written. But Dany and Tyrion are drinking some wine together. And Dany says, have you decided if I'm worthy? To which Tyrion responds, have you decided if you're going to kill me? So it's, and he's like, it's wise because that's what your father would have done. To which... Danny says, well, what would your father have done? So, and Tyrion's like, well, since my father publicly sentenced me to death, it's pretty obvious what my father wanted of me. But if I ever decide to tell you why I killed him, we're going to need a lot more wine than this. So,
yeah. I thought considering the two actors have never been together on screen together on Game of Thrones, I thought the chemistry was great.
Yeah, it really was great. And considering that Emilia Clarke doesn't really have a long list of acting, she's doing quite well. And
yeah, she held her own. I mean, I mean, it probably comes down to the writing too and directing, but I thought the actors did a great job. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then it kind of gets to... really Daenerys unveiling, her true vision for what she wants to accomplish. And I think really Tyrion sees what he wants to see, or really finally figures out what Varys has been talking about, is his reason for going on or being a part of this.
Yeah. He talks about, cause like he does throw some curveballs at her, about, all leaders are terrible, but he wants her to be the kind of terrible that prevents her people from being the worst kind of people. And even like he brings up Varys, how he trusts Varys, and she's even shocked at that. He's like, this is the man who tried to kill me for 20 years. You know, and he's kind of showing her how there's different shades of people. And he says, yes, but he did that in order to stay alive himself. He goes, but you weren't killed. You know, he was like, he goes, if anything, Varys is the one who kept you alive all these years. So she's kind of seeing things through his eyes and how the game is played in Westeros.
Where is Varys? Are we going to see him again?
Yeah, you'll see him probably the last episode.
Okay.
I know where he is, but... so...
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to give anything away. But, yeah. So she's like, oh, so you trust this man? And he says, yes. Oddly, him and my brother. And then, of course, she weirdly says, you mean the man who killed my father? He's like, you say, yes. He goes, and then she kind of just... I don't know how to express her expression, but he's like, oh, well, perhaps now I will have you killed. You know? Of course, yeah, he says it so great, that his response of just a man who's lost hope, even though he does have hope now. It's like, you know, that's your prerogative to kill me whenever you want. He goes, you know, I've given up on life until Varys convinced me to come here. So if I die now, at least my final days will be interesting. So I thought it was great. Just, you know, I was like, oh, it's great. You know, I've lived a good life. I've met, you know, I've seen dragons. Basically, he has no regrets right now. So, but she says, I'm not going to kill you. I do accept you as my advisor. So, but then, of course, she says, I accept you as my advisor, but then very smartly takes away his wine.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
His motivation.
Yeah. And as his first advice now, as her advisor, he says, so you want Westeros? Let's try aiming at something smaller, you know. And, but she's not amused because she thinks, you know, like, no, this is my whole purpose. He's like, well, let's assume you do conquer Westeros. Who will support you? The common people, she says. You know, it's like, okay, you have that now. So he's saying that let's try to organize Meereen. Let's try to see this experiment first. He goes, you have that now. You have the common people. But what's that been like? It's been awful for her because right. She doesn't have the support of the ruling people.
Yeah.
So... And here's the third Easter egg, kind of. You know, it's like House Targaryen is gone. No one of your blood remains. Yeah.
You know? wink, nudge.
Wink, wink. Yeah, like poor Maester Aemon just died the previous episode. but yeah. So he's basically saying you're going to need a support of a major house. And because he's thinking that way, like, you know, the houses will always be there. To which she cleverly says, I don't care about the houses. I'm going to basically destroy all of them.
Well, there's a nice, you know, description where he's like, they're all the spokes of this wheel, right. And they're always turning and crushing the people below it. He says, well, you know, it's a great thought. A lot of people have had the same feelings you're having. But she says, I don't want to stop the wheel. I want to crush or break the wheel. Which I think excites Tyrion in a way, because I think Tyrion really does want kind of the same thing.
I think Varys... Littlefinger, Tyrion, I think they, and of course Dany, they all want that. Like they want kind of like a united kingdom of one people. Whereas you can see like the Lannisters, Cersei, all them, you can see the Tyrells, they're still playing the old game where it's like, no, like our house is the greatest and that's it. So yeah, I think it does excite him that it's the little people like him, like small people, Littlefinger, who've never been respected. They're like, we want the power to actually make the world a better place.
Yep. And then we go to Jorah, who wants to become a slave again to fight.
Who wouldn't want to be a slave again?
I mean, what does he have at this point? So I get kind of what he's trying, but poor guy, I mean, he doesn't have much to live for.
Does he just want to die in front of her?
This is a really...
See, I'm dead. Feel sorry for me now?
I didn't understand this.
Show me a tear.
Yeah, I didn't understand this scene either, because he's selling himself back into slavery. And he wants to fight in the pits again. So that's what I'm saying. What's his motivation? Is he hoping that he'll almost die and then she'll cry out that she loves him too? Or she'll save his life and allow him back in?
Where she puts up, you know, is she in charge? Is it like in Rome where they put the thumb up, thumb down? And she goes, no, thumb down, you die.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he looked at his grayscale spreading in the previous scene. So you're kind of like, yeah. Is he thinking I'm already a dead man? At least I'll die fighting in front of the woman I love, or what? So
I don't know what he's thinking. I think he just is. It just didn't, like I said, it didn't make sense to me. But I guess we'll see. Maybe he has to be some dramatic death. You know, that's how some people are.
Going down in a blaze of glory.
There you go. Yeah.
I like your Land Before Time little reference there earlier too.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I pull from everywhere. We then go back to Jack's favorite character, Cersei, with the Septa trying to get her convinced again, and we get some drinking some floor water.
Yeah, it's another short scene where the Septa comes in, basically just torturing her with her water. Just confess.
Isn't there water dripping into the cell?
I think, but like, if you actually look at this, really interesting. That cell is probably pretty dirty, and even you can see her name is escaping me. The actress's name, when she sips up the water, she immediately spits it back out on the ground, and then sips it back up again, and then spits it back out. So like, they probably told her don't drink the water.
But it's the water probably is. I mean, I'm sure they didn't have fluoride in the water. I'm sure it wasn't the water wasn't top notch. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm just thinking, if you're thirsty, you're going to drink anything, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. But you do see in this scene Cersei change a little bit, give her a little bluff, like, I can make you rich, I can make you lady of the court, just let me out of here, to which, she just says, confess.
Confess.
And then, of course, then she goes back to herself, like, all I do is imagine hideous ways for you to die every minute I'm in here.
I thought that was funny, and maybe that's what she kind of swayed me to her side a little bit. Yeah. I don't mind her dying. I just don't like this. I don't like this lady. I don't like her attitude.
The Septa, or?
Yeah, the Septa. I don't like her attitude. She's just, your sins, confess. Shut up.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like what they say, you catch more bees with honey or whatever it is, or flies with honey. It's like, if someone was doing that to me, just only word I heard was confess and a spoon in my face, I would die a miserable death just to prove them wrong. I don't like you. So
I'm going to die. Show you. Ooh.
Yeah.
I win.
I win and I lose. But but you do see Cersei do swallow her pride a little bit and drinks the water off the ground. So.
Tasty. We then go to the wall with Gulu, tending to Sam's, facial scars. He was kicked and punched several times.
Yeah, it's a sweet scene. Sam asks Gilly, how are you? And she's like, I'm fine. He goes, you know what I mean. And I'm not really quite sure what they're referring to in this. Like, is she scared of the other Night's Watch members, or is she scared that she might be pregnant? I didn't quite understand it. What are you guys' thoughts?
Probably how she feels after they, had relations last week.
Yeah.
That was what I got out of it.
So was it another Tom, it's like, did I hurt you?
Well, no, maybe it's more like, the only time she had sex probably is with her dad.
With her dad, yeah.
So
she's had a kid, though. I mean, it's not like...
Well, I know, but it was with her dad. So maybe I was thinking maybe that's what it was. Sam's a sensitive guy.
That's true.
He cares.
The Cincy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was getting at. If I could be.
No, I get it.
Jay hates everybody, so no, I don't think, he's probably thinking, Gilly, just kill her off now.
Then we have Ollie bringing some bedside food there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how I feel about this kid at all, because he's not in the books. But he comes in and he's doing them a favor. He's bringing them food, being nice, to which Sam he's like, oh, he's such a sweet boy, such a nice boy, And then Oily wants to ask Sam about John's plan, like the reasoning behind it. And Sam actually makes a much better case than John ever did. Always like, these people murdered my family, they're, and Sam's like, there are good and bad people everywhere, but then Oily's back, how can we trust them? And then Sam, that's when he kind of drives it home. He's like, I've seen the army of the dead. I've seen the White Walkers. They're coming for the living. And when it's time, we're going to need everyone. I mean, this is a risk to bring the wildlings in, but sometimes you'll see that a wrong choice to you at this time will turn out to be the right choice in the long run.
Well, Sam is right, but you can see how the kid, you know, he saw his whole family,
yeah,
were just farmers killed and murdered for, you know, for no reason, and you can see what his hatred and. But, you know, Sam is right. Sam has seen these guys. And you know, of course, we see the end of the scene, what happens with these walkers, man. It's just it's crazy. So, yeah, they need everyone they can. But the kid, he doesn't know any better. He just knows that these people that he's supposed to trust killed his whole family.
Right. I mean, he's mad. He's bitter. And I don't blame him either. He's scared to death that they're going to come in and kill him.
Right.
But, you know, it's not so much what they're saying. It's his facial expression. When he asks Sam, do you believe that? Do you actually trust this? And, of course, Sam's like, of course I do, you know. And, but you can see, like, this stern meanness on this kid's face. And then Sam goes, don't worry about John. He always comes back. To, I don't think the kid was worried about John at all.
No.
And that's what I'm saying is, like, it's just kind of like, oh, okay. It's just more like he's feeling out Sam. That's what I felt. You know, he's feeling like what Sam believes,
mm-hmm. right?
More than what John believes.
You think he doesn't look up to John anymore? Doesn't trust John anymore?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like he. Because if you think about who the people he's hanging around with now, he's hanging out with the people like Alistair Thorne, who's always been against John and Sam.
Now, so when John comes back, we think he's going to come back eventually. Does the kid try to kill John?
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. You never know. So,
all right. And then John, of course, has to defend himself. Does he kill the kid? Does he kill Ollie?
Oh, yeah. Well, Arya did it, so killing the kid. So,
yeah. I think that would kill John to have to kill. I mean, I would think that would, because John has, you know, he's not like Jay again. We have to keep pointing to Jay. He has feelings. He cares about people. So, I think it would hurt him to. I think he would feel bad about killing the kid.
Yeah, but, you know, he did kill Ygritte, so.
Yeah, it's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, well, you killed my love. Oh.
From there, we go to the close of the episode with John and Tormund arriving at Hard Home.
Oh, yeah, the climax of the episode.
Yes, but he's greeted by was it Mr. Bones or whatever the heck his name is? Like
the Lord of Bones. You say Mr. Bones. I think Mr. Bones,
that works, right?
I think a White Christmas when you say Mr. Bones.
Mr. Bones.
Yeah, Mr. Bones. Anyway, we'll get into that some other time. But John and Tormund walk up and Lord, and they're not greeted too warmly by the Lord of Bones, who was also the guy who took John prisoner in season 2 with Ygritte and Khorne Halfhand. Tormund respectfully asks for a meeting of all like the leaders, to which Lord of Bones, you know, says, no, you're not in charge here. And he also inquires to why Tormund is not in chains, to which John replies, he's not my prisoner, we're allies, to which all of the wildlings are kind of in an uproar. And Lord of Bones calls him a traitor and then insults him a little further, to which Tormund just takes his stick from him, and echoing Mr. Echo, and just beats him to death with his own club. So that was the end of
that argument.
But yeah.
I was watching on my laptop on HBO Go, and it froze on me on that scene.
Oh, no.
I go, what? And it took me like 5 minutes to get it back on track. I'm like going, what the heck?
Oh,
I mean, I figured that he was going to beat the snot out of him and kill him. But I didn't know if anybody else would jump in.
That's one of the things that I really don't like about living out here in L.A. is that we constantly get alert messages on the TV. I mean, it's an Amber Alert or a flood alert or something. Yeah. And it constantly interrupts TV. And you're like, no!
That stinks. Well, at least though, if you have HBO, you watch the West Coast or the East Coast feed, so you can watch it at the same time as the East Coasters.
Yeah, I usually wait though and watch it with the West. But
I don't know why I wouldn't.
I think the HBO on the East Coast here is just done is shown in standard definition, whereas in the West will be in high definition. And I think that's why. Yeah. Huh. I know that's the way it used to be on one of my other TVs. So
when San Fran, it was high def no matter what, so I watched it on the East Coast time just so I stayed spoiler free.
Oh, but the internet wasn't that good. So.
Internet did stink. It's very true.
In Silicon Valley, the internet sucks.
At least in the hotel it did.
Which makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. But yeah, so the
maybe
next
run by Pied Piper.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next scene, though, we are actually now in the meeting hall within Hard Home, and John makes a pretty good argument that, you know, we're not here for friendship with the Wildlings and the Night's Watch. We're here for survival. That they need each other to defeat the White Walkers, which of course they get. He is laughed at. You know, you can't beat. They all don't believe you can beat the White Walkers. So he presents the dragon glass, just, you know, showing them like this is something that can kill them. And he asks that, you know, if they all agree to come south with him, he'll give them land to farm. They can live. You know, they can see their kids grow up. And so the only thing he asks in return is that when the time comes, that they'll fight the war against the White Walkers with them. But some of the Wildlings object and say, you know, the Crows are our enemy. But John's, you know, he's saying, I'm not asking you to forget your dead. I'm not asking you to be my friend. I'm asking you to think about your children. So we can't stop them individually as, you know, Wildlings alone or the South alone or the Night's Watch. We need to do it together. And then Tormund, of course, stands up for John, saying, you know, he's got courage. He's a natural leader. He didn't have to come here because he didn't have to come to Hardhome, but he did because he needed them, and that we need them. So
he did say he was prettier than both his daughters.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I thought
did he say prettier? I thought he said he's more talkative. Than both of you. Okay.
I thought prettier. Is this?
I thought he said. Okay. I thought he said because it was the second time someone had referred to him as pretty. I thought. Hearing things, but I thought
maybe he's got what he said. Man crush on Jon Snow.
No, let's see. No, not really.
Is he Cersei? Because otherwise,
he's not Cersei. I got a man crush on Cersei. I'm sorry.
I think it's just a normal crush, actually.
No, it's man crush.
Yeah. But the Fens, of course, the man-eating Wildlings are the only ones who object and say, "Yeah, we're not going with you."
Yeah, you can't break bread with a crow.
But he does change his mind awfully quick once the White Walkers show up.
Okay, you're good.
Yeah. So then we have people starting to go and fill out their ships or going to their ships. He's like, "There's only 5,000. We need more." And Tormund's like, "Ah, don't worry. They'll come around." To which point, the dogs start barking and. All hell breaks loose.
It's almost verbatim what I have in my notes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, it's great. It's like, oh, cool. Yeah, actually, there's almost another kind of Easter egg in here, too, but it's not really. But it's Tormund in the book. John shows him a letter, and he looks at it and goes, oh, I can't read, or I don't read so well. And this one, he says, I can't count so well. So it's kind of a echo of the same thing. But I just thought it was neat. But, yeah, the people, as soon as the dogs start barking, you have this cloud of snow that just starts to show up. And I'm thinking it's just like a regular cloud of ice and snow showing because it always gets colder when the White Walkers show up. And you just see the screams and the people, the Wildlings start running towards the gate, to which the Wildlings order the gate shut. And we quickly find out that it wasn't snow that was falling. It was a zombie avalanche. they've just pretty much wiped out everyone that was outside of the walls of Hardhome.
Insane.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that level of, I don't know, action or something. I wasn't prepared. It's usually the second to last episode is like where everything goes down, and it may very well still be. But the fact that it was here, I wasn't expecting it yet.
Yeah, I had no clue what was going on. I said, I was kind of like Jay in the beginning. I go, are they going to end it here? Because I looked, I go, it's not like 20 minutes. He goes, no way. What's going to happen here? And then I started thinking, who's going to die? Is Jon Snow going to die? I said, they can't kill off Jon Snow. I really had no idea what was going to happen.
Yeah, I think this will still be the high budget battle for this season. But, I mean, there's just still more shocking things that will happen, but they won't be on this scale
right
in the next couple episodes. But yeah, then John rallies what little Night's Watch he has, along with Tormund, to defend the people so they can have the best shot of escaping. To which, during the battle, he looks up to see the actual White Walkers on top of the cliffs observing everything that they're doing. And then it dawns on him that they should get the Dragonglass. So he shoots into the hut where the meeting was taking place, to where another White Walker has entered that building, to which the Finn and Jon Snow, the Finn says, "I'll take care of him," to which the White Walker kills him in like two moves. So,
Wow. Yeah, good job.
Yeah. And then he just kind of grabs Jon and throws him back before he can grab any of the dragon glass. He loses his sword, Longclaw, outside. And after some quick moves by Jon, he finds himself outside fighting the White Walker and picks up Longclaw, which is made of Valyrian steel. And when the White Walker attempts to kill Jon, he hits the blade and it stops it for once. So,
and he was shocked.
They both were. Yeah. So it shows that the Valyrian steel, because it's made from the volcanic lava of Valyria, which is where the dragonglass and all that stuff comes from. So the sword is made of dragon steel, is what they call it in the books.
I figured when they showed the scene where he lost his sword, I figured that had to be the way it was going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Because just the way they showed the sword going away, I go, okay, they made such a point of showing it.
I like, because we had discussions about Valyrian steel on previous episodes, so it was nice that I kind of had a bit of a context and history of Valyrian steel going into it. Mm-hmm. You know, how we talked about Ned the Stark, you know,
right,
big blade was split into two, and that those are two Valyrian blades, and all the other possible, you know, Valyrian swords out there.
Plus, I figured Jon Snow wasn't going to die at that point, so I said, okay.
I wasn't sure, though, because that whole scene, because, you know, he falls and he gets the wind knocked out of him, and, you know, he's kind of like, oh, he's gone, he's dead. But just the way that whole scene was done, where, sure, I mean, they got their butts handed to him. I mean, it's just decimated, but you even see the king is like, this is a wrinkle I didn't expect. This is something that I didn't
see. I was even thinking the girl that the woman who was in charge had put her two girls on the two children on the and said, "I'll be back." Mm-hmm. I thought maybe she'll be Jon Snow's love interest. No.
Yeah.
I said, "Oh, she's tough. She's a fighter. She's not bad looking." I said, "But I just wonder if she's Jon likes his wildling." So I said, "Maybe this will be but no, I was wrong.
Yeah, it was a bit creepy, wasn't it? The Walking Dead children kind of attacking her,
and she freaked out.
Yeah, I wondered if it was because, you know, she had her own kids and she sees like 7-8 kids.
I think it freaked her out and she couldn't and she didn't fight.
Yeah, but yeah. She was like the really cool character that was introduced, and it's like, oh, you know.
But that's what Game of Thrones does. I mean, you just don't know who's going to get killed off.
But just trippy stuff. Great yeah. Action. Great. But just the close to the episode is so. It was crazy. It was great.
But how did she end up so close to the water?
I didn't know. They cut. It was a cut shot, so it wasn't showing her near the water. It was.
Oh, was it near the water? Okay, God, I was thinking, how'd she get to the water so fast?
Yeah, I know. It does kind of give that where you think she's near the water. Like, no, I agree. It was a cut shot.
Okay. All right. Then I'm cool. Then we're cool.
But yeah, and then we should also talk a little bit about the giant that was pretty cool.
Yes.
Its name is Wunmun, which is it's a book name. It's like run, but with a W. And so a lot of people thought that's what Torment was saying. It was like run, but it's actually Wunmun is his name. Oh. But yeah, he just basically just tossing them away. Like, I thought that was really cool when he just flattened one, you know, just stepped on, like, yeah.
Yeah, you know. Like a bug.
Yeah, and of course we all know how to say "What are you looking at now?" in their language. but yeah, like, and then we see Jon finally escapes to the boat with a few people he has left, and he's watching all of these the few people that remain on the beach just be slaughtered by the zombie army of the dead. And then we see the arrival of the Night's King walk out onto the pier looking at John. And it's a really just kind of eerie, almost silent scene to where he just looks out at John and raises his arms. And then all of a sudden, all the friends that they had just rise up, you know, alive now, saying, like, basically saying, like, all that and my army is just stronger. You know, it's just, it was such a great scene.
And he dropped the mic. And as he got it, he dropped the mic.
Just
the
about.
Mic. Say what? Yeah.
No, it's true. It was just a very.
Because they even stopped. Really they even stopped paddling. They were sitting there, like, just staring.
Yeah,
just staring at the whole thing. There was nobody paddling. There was just a. Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic scene. Amazing.
Yeah, and that closes out the episode. Just a great episode. An extra 10 minutes than usual. Just great. Absolutely great.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, that is what we thought. Now time to get to what you guys thought. That's right, we got ourselves a healthy amount of listener feedback this week. So what do you say we get into it?
Say we do it.
All right, here we go. We're going to have our first set of calls here, 3 calls, and we're going to go to it right now.
All right.
Hey, guys, this is Jeff from Wiley. Just got done listening to your Game of Thrones podcast for episode 7. Two things. One, you're talking about, have we seen anybody else die of old age in the story? Hoster Tully, Catelyn Stark's dad, appeared to have died from old age. So I was thinking about that. And the other thing, the whole Theon going to, which tower did he go to? I think they made it, I guess the one thing I think is that if he went to the Broken Tower, which is where she wanted him to go, that's supposed to be a broken, sort of rotted out, ruined tower. So why would Ramsay kind of keep an office up there? So I think it was just a trick of the camera. I think he actually didn't go to the ruined tower. He went to wherever Ramsay's officing at. So anyway, those are my thoughts. Wanted to call. Sound like you guys were lonely. See ya.
Y'all, that was some shit there. Holy moly.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Nick. This is Maggie from Northern Virginia. And I just watched episode 8 of Game of Thrones. Heart Home, whatever. I don't even know what it's called. And all I've got, because I was trying to think of what I could say, because everything I want to say, you guys won't play on a clean podcast. But so I've got frack, 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 frack. Wow, that was an episode. Daenerys and Tywin, or Tyrion, whatever his name is, talking was awesome. I mean, we've been waiting for that forever, and that happened, and that was great. And Arya is starting to be on somebody else, which is so cool. And then Sansa knows that her brothers are alive, which will give her some hope, hopefully, and help her get out of her crazy situation. And then there was the battle. Which was still, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight, because that was really creepy. And those Walker children, or I don't know what they are, like the zombie children, they were crazy. They killed the cool wildling lady who, I was like, who is she? Who is that actress? And it's actually, she's in the new Pitch Perfect 2, if anybody else has seen that. I was like, who is that? And that's who she is. But wow, what an episode. This is my first time watching Game of Thrones kind of live with everybody else. I caught up last summer, so I'm very excited to kind of see how it ends after that episode. I'm kind of like not sure what's going to happen next week. So can't wait to hear your thoughts. Love listening to the podcast and love all the thoughts from the book that Nick gives, because then when my friends start talking about the books like they did tonight, I can know things and sound smart, even though I haven't read them. So thanks, Nick. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for those calls.
Hey, did Maggie think she was calling a BSG podcast? Frack, 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 frack.
I appreciate her, you know, having the restraint.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm pretty sure Jack and I haven't seen Pitch Perfect, but I assume Jay did. So yeah. He probably knew who she was.
So you knew who she was from Pitch Perfect?
Yeah.
Me?
You yeah. saw it. You watched it.
I've seen the first one. She's in the second one, I guess.
Oh, second one.
I've not seen the second one.
Okay. You want to see it, though, right?
I would like to see it, but I have a child, so I don't go to the movies
anymore. Oh, I have a child. That's why I can't see it. We have no babysitters here.
Hey, listen, I'm all for it, but Colleen has to give up the whole breastfeeding thing. So, actually, no, Zachary does, which...
Zachary, yeah. It's Colleen's not breastfeeding herself, is she?
Yeah.
He's up and walking. He's up and walking now. You know, hey, just get him a job. You know, he can...
Yeah.
You gotta work for a living, kid.
I got apple poopy diapers. So, but you know, she did mention that, you know, that Sansa found out her brothers are alive, and nobody, we don't care. I know that was actually a pretty big deal. And when she said, I kind of forgot all about it, even though we did talk about it. That battle at the end just kind of changed. There was so much happened in this episode, but all I can think about is the battle.
Yeah, and exactly. The battle is definitely the thing that people are going to talk about the most about. But I also, you already know that Bran is up in the tree area, yeah. and she's not going to find him anytime soon. And we haven't seen Rickon in forever. So yeah. It's kind of like, who's that other brother again? Like, you know, you just, so it's not, they're
where
not
was
characters.
He? Where was he last? I forget.
Yeah, he got, they split up at going towards the wall, and Bran goes north of the wall, and Rickon goes down to White Harbor, which is still in the north, but it's at a very, it's on the east, southeast coast. It's like their major city in the north.
So you're saying Rickon has become Chuck Cunningham?
Maybe.
Okay.
But yeah, I totally forgot about Tully dying too. The other old guy that was Kate's dad. Yeah,
Jeff was right. The Broken Tower obviously didn't go to that.
Right.
Which I said, so I was right at least.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
And the second caller, yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
can't argue with anything you said. I mean, he was 100% spot on.
Yeah.
Didn't give his name though, so he's not really getting any credit, but call back and give us your name.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
He summed up the whole episode in one phrase.
He did. I mean, yeah. I think we all said it, so
yeah. For sure.
Are we allowed to say that on this podcast?
Sure, why not? It's an HBO show, I mean.
Okay.
Did he say the F word or S?
The S word.
Yeah. S word, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Maybe I'll edit it out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Might put like a beep in there. Who knows? Okay. All right. Well, what are you guys ready to get to our last set of calls?
I'm so ready.
All right. Well, here we go.
Hi, guys. It's Priscilla from New Jersey calling again about Game of Thrones. I wanted to make sure I called before you guys went online because Memorial Day weekend kind of screwed me up a bit. This is by far my best favorite episode. I love every second of it. And the only thing I wanted just to reiterate was, so Giant Bane, our favorite ginger from The Wall, says, you know what? Jon Snow is prettier than both of my daughters. I just found that hilarious because they just can't stop. Jon Snow's just a cutie pie. He belongs to these girls. Maybe we can, I don't know, put some long hair on him. That's it, guys. It was a great episode. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it.
Hi guys, it's Eckhart from Bethesda with a comment on Game of Thrones. I actually watched it this week. Last week I decided just to listen to your guys' recap, and that was sufficient. But I really liked this episode for that conversation between Tyrion and Daenerys, because I think we realize now that the role of Tyrion in many ways is to kind of reflect the thoughts of the reader. And he comments so eloquently about the fact that why does everyone try to conquer Westeros, especially for Daenerys? Why doesn't she just stay where she is, you know, and basically enjoy her victory and all the assets and the military units that she's acquired? I mean, Tyrion's seen just his whole life different factions try to struggle for the Iron Throne, and nobody is ever really able to hold it, and even the king who actually is holding it is in debt to those banks, to Braavos. So it'd be great to hear you guys discuss this topic further in terms of why are people even fighting over it? Thanks.
Hello, for the Game of Thrones podcasts. This is a very serious crackpot theory I have. I believe that it is possible that the White Walkers are the actual heroes of the story. They come down to wipe out the evil humans whenever they get to the tipping point where their awfulness overshadows anything good about them. Look at all the leaders of all the human tribes, the Targaryens, the Boltons, the whoever's, all of them, Lannisters. They're all pretty disgusting human beings. And then the White Walkers come down and clear them out, purge of these terrible people, and then retreat back north until it's time for them to come down again. That's my very serious crackpot theory, and I will not stick to it if it does not come true. All right, later.
All right, thank you for those calls.
I told you we should have ignored that last one.
Well, we do have a response from Dan the Waffle Man that says, I completely disagree with Michael David and his theory. His mind was obviously destroyed on Interstate 95. And I also claim Nick's coffee table, Dan the Waffle Man.
Actually, it's not a bad theory.
Yeah, whenever I hear someone say something like that, I always think of The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker, because those two guys, even though they're mean, they are the villain according to Bond, but
right.
They're just trying to make the world a better place, you know, by killing off all the people who were just destroying the world, you know, and
right.
So it's like, oh well, really, if you told the movie from their point of view instead of Bond's point of view, they would be the kind of the good guy. But, you know, I can't see the White Walkers really being the good
guy. But Jon Snow seemed like he was a good guy. Jon Snow seems like he's a good guy, right?
Well, Jon Snow's a good guy because he's a cutie pie.
Well,
so,
I get he's a cutie pie, but is he yeah. is he other than that, but they're still trying to kill him too. So it's just everybody in their way, we're all bad.
Yeah, just they're trying to kill anything that's living, pretty much. Just like Melisandre says, you know, like only the living can defeat the dead, or, you know, they don't, you know.
That would be, I was joking about ignoring the call, but is a kind of, I like the theory.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I liked it.
I know what that was all about, but I liked it.
And what about the whole conquering Westeros?
Oh, why? Yes. Tyrion reflects the reader's thoughts, which I agree as well. Like, Tyrion usually is the voice of reason and kind of answers things that you're already thinking in your head while you're reading. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely hard to hold Westeros because it's so vast. It's basically, if you took a map of the Earth, it's basically the top of Norway all the way to the bottom of Spain, distance-wise. And the same as in temperature and everything and climates. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like, before Aegon the Conqueror came, which was 300 years before the present day in Westeros, you know, it's constantly being conquered. You had the original Children of the Forest and things like that, and then you had the Andals that showed up, or the First Men, then the Andals, and they're constantly as technology goes. It's the same. It's just European history. You know, the Bronze Age and steel came, and people who just have better technology are constantly winning. And then it was eventually divided into seven kingdoms, or really it's more like eight if you count the Iron Islands. But and they've slowly just been at battle with each other because, you know, where the Lannisters live, they have gold and minerals. But where the Tyrells live, it's all fruits and vegetables and lots of things like that. Whereas in the Stormlands, which is where the Baratheons, it's wood and deer and more wildlife. And then you think of the Eyrie as like Scotland, and it's just rocky. And so like people are just – it's just human nature to fight and want to take over everything. But it's just too large of a kingdom to control as one kingdom. And it wasn't until Aegon the Conqueror, 300 years prior, he unified all those kingdoms. But the only reason why he was able to unify them is because he had dragons. Because the fear of, you know, you revolting and bringing an army out was pointless if a dragon could, in one swoop, completely burn and melt your entire army. So it's like that's what kept them in line. And then after the dragons died out, that's when you start to see Robert's Rebellion and the Baratheons take over and defeat the Targaryens. So,
could the dragons be what could defeat the White Walkers?
That's my theory of not necessarily the White Walkers. I'm sure that when we get to that point, you'll see probably some dragons fly over the army of the undead or the dead and just melt them away in probably like a couple of Passovers.
Right.
But the actual White Walkers, though, I'm sure we'll actually see actual fighting between them and people with dragon glass or Valyrian steel or something. So, and then he goes, you can't take out Bran also. Bran will have some major role to do in all this because he'll have powers that we have yet to see learning. So,
all right.
Let's see how it plays out. And which makes a great segue to what happens in the book stays in the book, our closing out segment for the show. So if you don't want to be spoiled by the book, but honestly, you want to know, this is good information, stick around. Because he doesn't actually spoil anything. At this point, it's all pretty much caught up anyhow. But anywho, let's dive in a little bit deeper about this episode and see what changed and maybe some more information about the scenes.
Yeah, it's mostly new information, like as in stuff I'm just adding on to. But there's a lot of new material in this. Cersei's story is pretty much the only one that's dead on with the books of just her being in the prison cell and being tortured by Nurse Ratched. And then, like I said, Tyrion and Dany have yet to meet in the books. They're almost there, so it should happen in the next book fairly soon, I would think. So everything we've seen is all new. And obviously Sansa isn't in Winterfell, so she doesn't know that Bran and Rickon are still alive, so in the books. With Arya's story, this assignment does happen to spy on the gambler insurance salesman guy, but it happens a little bit later in her training. At this point, really, she's assigned just to go around town and listen and learn secrets and learn how to judge what's truth or not truth and learn to kind of adapt people's lives and kind of incorporate them in her own so she can be multiple people if she wants to be. And then report back all these things to Jaqen H'ghar. Well, not really, the kindly man. So, but with the things that are really interesting that you guys want to know about, though, is the deal with Hardhome. This battle never is described in the books. As I talked about last time, in the books, the way this happens is that the Lord of Bones is actually the one who is behind the wall at first with Jon. And he's actually burned alive instead of Mance Rayder. And Mance Rayder is still alive in the books. But Melisandre like puts a spell over him to make him look like Mance. And so all the people believe it's Mance. Mance goes into hiding. So, but he does know that Tormund is just north of the wall in a campsite. So he sends Mance's wife, Val, north to meet Tormund to get him to come south to the wall. So she goes up there, convinces Tormund to come back, and then John inquires about White Walkers, to which Tormund says, yes, we were followed by them and they picked off a few of us, but never in a large massive attack. And so, but then Tormund does tell him though that there are some of them up in Hardhome. So this is kind of a combination, this scene of what Tormund had to do coming south, and then the boat. So John sends, I think, three ships, like an exploratory, to Hardhome to see if these people want to come with them. And when they get there, they're already being slowly picked as well by White Walkers, slowly killing them off. And to which John receives a note saying, just forget about them, they're doomed. And Miss John, of course, is not wanting to do this because, like we're seeing in the show, there's an act of desperation. It's like, you know, the more of these people who die, the more enemies we'll have later. So he decides to send more ships to Hardhome to get as many people back as possible. But that's pretty much where it ends in the book.
Is this this scene, this more epic battle? In place of that other epic battle that never really talked about?
Right, they never talked about it. Like they never talked about what happened at Hardhome. They just see you you really see it from a note, the note that gets sent to John saying, like, you know, these people are dying. They're being attacked by White Walkers slowly. And let's see here. And so that's why he wants to help them out more. But it's basically the same thing. It's driving the same point home. Instead of two separate little stories, though, you're getting one big one, yeah. Which I thought was done really well in the show. So you're still saying, and he still offers them the same deal, like, you know, fight with us, I'll give you the land. I just want you to be there. So, and then what is, and to answer the freezing water thing, that's why I think they didn't do anything like that in the show, is because it all is just in a note in the book. So to kind of threaten John's life with freezing the water, or even having like a Pirates of the Caribbean thing where they go underneath the water, it would have been kind of overkill or something, because right. they just don't know. And it made sense too, just like, hey, I've got plenty of men now. It, you know, when I have time, I'll come back for you. So it worked.
Okay.
Cool. See. Is there any type of now? I read somewhere that the Night's King was actually part of the Night's Watch. He was the 13th Lord Commander.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's some backstory there about him.
Right, I was just about to get to that.
Oh, sorry.
No, no worries. Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, the others originally appeared 8,000 years before Aegon the Conqueror came. Okay. So they've been around for a while. So it's roughly around 8,300, you know, if you want to put a number out there. The Night's King was the 13th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. And to give you some of y'all some perspective, John is the 998th Lord Commander. So there's been quite a long time, you know, between then. So basically, the Night's King was the Lord Commander pretty much right as soon as the wall was completed construction. Okay. Most of the stuff you learn about the others, aside from when you actually see them in the books, come from old Nan's tales, which is the old woman who was telling Bran those stories while he was in bed and things.
Right.
And the legend that she tells him is that he fell in love – this is the Lord, the Night's King. He fell in love with a woman with skin as white as the moon and eyes as blue as the stars. So that, you know, just in a telling, it's a White Walker. He loved her, but her skin was cold as ice. And this is an interesting thing. And when he gave his seed to her, he gave his soul as well. So that kind of tells you that, you know, he became an other by loving her so much. But instead of going into the north, though, he decided to declare himself the king of the Night's Watch, and he took over the Night Fort, which is a fort near Castle Black, which is the largest one on the wall, which is the one he tried to get that guy to go to repair, and he ended up beheading him, the same one.
Mm-hmm.
So he was king, though, of the wall for 13 years. But then he started committing atrocities and basically giving children to the White Walkers. So building the army. And so this is where it gets interesting a little bit. When people found out that he was doing this, his own brother, who was king in the north, rose up against him, along with Joramund, who was the first king beyond the wall. And they together defeated him and to free the Night's Watch. But of course, they didn't kill him. So when you read that, his own brother was king of the north. So the kings of the north are Starks. Uh-huh. So a lot of people believe that the Night's King is actually a Stark.
Ah.
Interesting.
So that could have been one of the reasons why he was looking at John funny. Or maybe just because he was a Night's Watch member. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
So just one of those.
Those skinny kids we see in the White Walkers, were they anyone – are they just kids just to freak us out or just –
I just assume they're kids, yeah. Oh, they could – yeah, I don't know.
Could they just have been anybody in particular, just
Most likely they're just kids from anybody, but I mean you could say they were Krayster's kids or something.
Yeah, I was wondering, maybe something like that.
Yeah. Could be. That's cool backstory with the Night's King.
Yeah.
And it's also it was a cool reveal that the Valyrian steel acts very similarly to what we've seen as Dragonstone or whatever it's called.
Yeah, and that's also something that hasn't been confirmed yet in the books.
It's Dragonglass.
Dragon Glass, sorry.
The Dragon Steel, though, with the actual sword, the Valyrian Steel, hasn't been confirmed yet in the books. But it is talked about because Sam, reading some of the books, says that it's legendary that a really great warrior defeated a White Walker with a magical blade. You know, so then I think he called it Dragon Steel or something like that. And that's what Sam's like, oh, I wonder if he means Valyrian Steel, you know. So
yeah.
It was actually confirmed on the show. So some people were like, ooh, cool. So
it was a cool scene. It was an amazing scene.
As a book fan, how do you feel about some of these things being revealed on the show? Or is it even going to be the same in the book?
I know, like I said in an earlier podcast, I know that the writers know the ending. But I don't think they know. It's kind of like Lost. You know, like they knew the beginning, they knew the end, but they didn't know how to get there. So I think that they're going to make up some stuff that won't be in the books, and then some stuff will be in the books.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's been a few chapters that George has put up on his website that are for the next book that hasn't even been published yet, that it seems like they're already going to do stuff from those chapters. So he's probably maybe has given them some chapters of the new book, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I don't know. Next season will be. I probably will still watch it, but half of me wants to wait for the book because I know that George really, really hopes to have it out early next year. So I'm gonna try my best to get it and read it all before the season starts. So
we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah.
We'll see.
But like I said, I know I did last week. I put a thing up. You know, if anyone out there wants to read, you know, these books, I highly recommend it. And then they're making a compilation of the first three novellas that are prequels to Game of Thrones. They'll be out in October, and they're worth reading, which is the egg, you know, that Aemon was crying out with his brother. There are stories that revolve around him.
Okay.
So, and they have little hints in there, too, even with Game of Thrones, of little character linkage and things. So.
Well, now that we've had the advertisement to go buy the books.
nice plug, Nick. Yeah.
No, I think it's a good place to close out this episode. Things are heating up. There is a lot of, you know, just overall just criticism of the season.
Are they heating up or cooling off?
Well, a lot of criticisms for the season in that, you know, it's too slow, like it's all build up. But I think people in general are seeing that it's
no one's complaining now.
But nonetheless, very excited to see where it goes. We're only two episodes left of Season 5 of Game of Thrones. If you want to give us a call for next week's episode, go ahead and do it at 206-309-0311.
Calling time.
So that's 206-309-0311. Calling time with questions, comments, and or theories. Also, you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJack group. There's a very healthy discussion on this past episode on that page right now, live and in charge. So you can check that out there and talk about all the recent episodes. We post them up and talk about them among many, many, many other TV shows as well. But we'll see you guys next week for the 9th episode, the penultimate episode that is traditionally where Ish hits the fans. So
well, how's it going to top this last episode?
Well, I mean, we'll just have to see.
How is it possible? I'm
just
going
to have to watch it and
find out. I'm going to say right now, can't be done. Can't be done.
Oh, man.
Wait, seriously confess.
Well, for Jay, Jack, and Nick, thank you for listening. We'll see you guys next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.